Micah 6:8, justice, mercy, humility. The chapter from Micah today contains the seed verse of Sanctuary Columbus Church, the verse that was the major driver for Pastor Rich to plant this multi-ethnic church over 9 years ago and continues to be a beacon for him and for our church today. Which might lead you to ask, with such an important verse and such an important chapter, in such an important series on biblical justice, at such an important time in our history as a nation, where's Pastor Rich? I want to hear from Pastor Rich today about Micah 6:8. And you know, I did too. But this pandemic has revealed a lot of things. And one of them is that we as humans need breaks. We need to be filled up. One of my favorite quotes is by a woman named Eleanor Brown, and she says, "Rest and self-care are so important. When you take time to replenish your spirit, it allows you to serve others from the overflow. You cannot serve from an empty vessel." Leading a church for 9 years is no joke. Leading a multi-ethnic church with Micah 6:8 as its core verse is even more difficult. Tack on moving to a new building in December, a historic pandemic, and leading our church amid our nation's racial reckoning, Rich and Shala needed a break. They needed time to replenish their spirits. Their vacation just happened to correspond with this sermon on Micah 6:8. So I am praying that they are indeed being replenished, and upon their return can serve from an overflow and not from an empty vessel. I'm not going to lie, to borrow a phrase from my friend Andrew Mensah, I'm not going to lie. I feel more pressure today to rightly handle the word of truth than any time I've been asked to preach at Sanctuary. Because we want these words of Micah 6:8 to be our DNA as a church. As our purpose states, we are a multi-ethnic church transformed by Jesus and united in service. And while, yes, it is our purpose, and while we do have a lot to celebrate as a church on how we've lived into that purpose and lived into Micah 6:8, we have a long way to go. So before we dive into Micah 6, I'm gonna spend a little bit of time praying for all of us. God, as we dive into your word, I pray that you would illuminate your word, that you would speak truth to us, that we would listen, that you would soften our hearts where they are hard, and that we would not hear what, you know, all these other voices maybe want to tell us, but God, right now we would hear your voice and your voice alone. God, give me a lot of grace as I try to correctly handle your word of truth. Amen. All right, today's big idea is that God indicts us and invites us to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with him. So like Pastor Rich has done for each chapter, let's first check out the flow of the different sections of Micah 6. So the big three headers, the first one is God's indictment. And that's the first five verses. Then into what we're more familiar with, what does the Lord require? And then a solid eight verses on the destruction of the wicked. So before we focus on the middle section, on the invitation part of this chapter, and specifically verse 8, let's spend some time in the 13 verses that surround it. Let's do that first before we go to the more often quoted middle section. Here's what the beginning of Micah 6 says. Hear what the Lord says. Arise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. Hear, you mountains, the indictment of the Lord, and you enduring foundations of the earth. For the Lord has an indictment against his people, and he will contend with Israel. O my people, what have I done to you? Have I wearied you? Answer me. And then in verses 4 and 5, which we won't read directly, God proceeds to remind his people yet again of all the ways he's worked for their good. All the ways that he has worked, and still the people are not doing what they're supposed to do. So I volunteer in a variety of capacities for Sanctuary, but in my full-time work, I'm a consultant for a small firm that helps companies engage leaders, managers, and frontline employees through change. And one of our favorite quotes to tell our clients is, "The need to change is not an indictment of past performance." And I like to use this quote in the past, and I use it a lot. And the point of the quote was, it's not that you've been doing things wrong. It's that the environment has changed. And therefore, you need to adapt to the changing environment. I really don't like this quote anymore, because we often do need an indictment. And I love how the Lord chose his audience for this indictment of his people. He chose the mountains, the hills, the enduring foundations of the earth. And I can't say convincingly why, but for me, there is some powerful symbolism that God chose this enduring audience, not a temporal audience of humans for this indictment, but the audience, in some ways, as the earth, is a symbolic witness to the great injustices of the world, to the absence of mercy, to the arrogance of humans. We can't blame the need to change on the environment changing. The people of God needed to change because of this strong indictment of their behavior. And if this tone of the first five verses of Micah 6 surprises us or discourages us, we've embraced a distorted view of God, perpetuated by the modern American church. Yes, we have a loving, a caring, a compassionate, a forgiving God, but part of him being a loving God is being just, and part of being just is calling out, and yes, indicting injustices. We need a much fuller picture of God, which includes his indictment. Remember last week when Carter, Pastor Rich's oldest son, read chapter 5, and four times at the end he quoted the phrase, "I will destroy, I will destroy, I will destroy, I will destroy." Well, God is back at it after the middle part of Micah. As we go towards the back end of the chapter, he says these words, "Therefore, I strike you with a grievous blow, making you desolate because of your sins. You shall eat, but not be satisfied. And there shall be hunger within you. You shall put away, but not preserve. And what you preserve, I will give to the sword. You shall sow, but not reap. You shall tread olives, but not anoint yourself with oil. You shall tread grapes, but not drink wine." Wow. Like, to me, the "you shalls," which we have highlighted here, reflect many aspects of the American dream. Eat, and eat some more. Indulge. And then the second one, invest. Invest your money, and it's going to have some sort of return for you for the future. And then the last ones, work hard, and you'll be blessed with the good life. A lot of ways it lays out those aspects of the American dream. But the problem with the so-called American dream is that it is an absolute byproduct of a long legacy of abuse, of oppression, and of exclusion. And I gotta be honest, there are a growing number of times when I wonder why God doesn't just do to our nation what he talks about in these verses. When those who have abused their power within business, within government, within legal structures, within schools to oppress others for their gain, I wanna say and I wanna pray, God, destroy the wicked. God, may they go hungry. May their wealth disappear. May their deceitful labor yield no more fruit. That indictment of the Lord is powerful. It's powerful. And it's important to not think that we're immune from the indictment, that it is just others. It's just the powers that be. It's just the man that needs this indictment. We need it too. And we're going to come back to that a little later. Let's shift now to the invitation, though, to the more famous part of the passage, to Micah 6, 6 through 8. "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" And then God essentially says, no, it's none of that stuff. Without saying that, you're not going to buy your way to making this right. Here's what he says instead. "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly," or do justice, "to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." As I attempted to really dive into Micah 6, 8 in a deeper way than I ever had before this week, I went to Google, because that's where you dive into stuff. And my Google searching actually brought me to a really insightful article. It was written by a professor from a theological seminary in Nigeria. His name is Cephas Tushima. And I had never heard of Dr. Tushima because at Gordon Conwell, where I went to seminary, I would estimate about 95% of the texts I was assigned were written by white men. So it was encouraging to me, it was very encouraging to stumble upon Dr. Tushima's article, specifically on Micah 6:8. It's an academic article that I had a hard time getting through because it was deep, it was filled with a lot of Hebrew that he was trying to really bring to life. But I give him a lot of credit for many of the insights that follow about this verse. One of the big things that he started with was this whole concept of require, that this is not a one-time thing. This is not like I accepted Jesus or I received Jesus. This is an ongoing requirement, an unending demand that God makes of his people in this passage. I think that's an important starting place. Now we're going to spend most of our time breaking down these three terms. So regarding justice, I want to quote Dr. Tushima directly. He says this. He says, justice composes the qualities of integrity and purpose, rectitude in conduct, and equity in social dealings. It is a negation of oppression, decadence, and inequity. It is a negation of oppression, decadence, and inequity. As I've been thinking about this sermon series on Micah, and when I think about a lot of the injustices that he calls out, there are absolutely parallels in our time and in our nation. So the text is a little small, but I'll try to illuminate it for us. An example here, the first one, Micah 2:2, which we did in the second week. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them away. They oppress a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. We certainly have a legacy of this in our country, you know, particularly regarding land, regarding houses, regarding real estate. And one of the major tragedies is how the desire to maintain white supremacy has just perpetuated this. Just, you know, some examples, the taking of lands of indigenous and black people, incidents like the Tulsa Black Wall Street massacre. And then this a long legacy of restrictions, of challenges, of redlining, et cetera, especially for African Americans. Micah 2:9, the women of my people you drive out from their delightful houses, and from their young children you take away my splendor forever. Alluding to some pretty intense stuff, pretty intense injustices happening to both women and children. Not just in the world, but in America specifically, there's a lot of trafficking that happens. These numbers on the screen are global, but it's reflected here in the U.S. as well. Huge industry with millions and millions of human beings suffering grave injustices in the trafficking business. That's not just a Micah thing. It's not just 2,800 years ago. It's today as well. Micah 3:9 through 10, hear this, you heads of the house of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel who detest justice and make crooked all that is straight, who build Zion with blood and Jerusalem with iniquity. I mean, if we're honest, America was also built with blood and iniquity too. And we have just a few rulers, using maybe a little bit of facetiousness, we have quite a few rulers who detest justice and do make crooked all that is straight. And one more, Micah 6:12, your rich men are full of violence. Your inhabitants speak lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Relevance for us today, see above. You know, just the pervasiveness of this kind of injustice that we do see in our society. But doing justice means that first we acknowledge that the injustices exist. We receive the indictment that there are significant wrongs that need to be made right. And to do justice then, once we acknowledge, means we then can actively and persistently pursue making right these wrongs. So let's move on to the second aspect of Micah 6:8. So moving down my shirt to mercy. The love mercy part of this verse. And to be honest, I've always struggled a little bit with this part of the verse because the standard English, word mercy typically means some sort of compassion towards somebody within it's my power to harm or to punish in some sort of way. I'm going to show you mercy instead of inflicting some sort of punishment. That's not really what this word's talking about. Sometimes it's often translated as kindness, and it's more than that too. So the Hebrew word here for mercy is hesed, which is the same word from Psalm 23. We're familiar with it. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Now, hesed is often translated by Jewish rabbis as unfailing love. So if we're going to do what the Lord requires of us, love mercy part really captures the spirit of unfailing love. But this is another time where Dr. Tushima did some enlightening for me. I love the way he elaborated on this even further. That hesed is the generous disposition for seeking the good of another that transcends common goodness and is expressed beyond ordinary expectation. Expressed beyond ordinary expectation. If love mercy means that, let's do more of that, Sanctuary Columbus. Let's do more of that in our families, in our communities, in our businesses, in our schools, where we transcend common goodness and seek the good of another. The last part of Micah 6:8, to walk humbly with your God. And for me anyway, this is what begins to distinguish biblical justice from simply social justice. Because we're walking humbly with your God or with our God. This is a discipleship issue. Discipleship in its simplest form is walking with God, but humbly walking with God has again been distorted in much of American Christianity to be an individualistic walk. I know in my circles in undergrad, how's your walk with God really meant, what are you reading? What are you learning? Are you living a holy life? Are you sinning? I never connected how's my walk with am I doing justice? Am I seeking the good of others expressed beyond ordinary expectation or loving mercy? But biblically, walking with God and walking humbly with God means so much more than an individual pursuit. In Ephesians alone, Paul tells us, walk in good works. He tells us again a few chapters later, walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called. Walk in love. Walk as children of light. Walking was never intended from a biblical standpoint to be some sort of individual thing. For those who read like that Footprints poem, at some point in your Christian walk, we were walking along the beach, and there's two sets of footprints, and then there's just one, and God's carrying you, all that's fine, but it is not just you and God going on some stroll on the beach. Walking is hard. Walking can be long. There was a brother who walked from Alabama to Minneapolis recently to show his commitment to justice. And there are people all around the world that will walk together in solidarity to try to make things right. Our walk takes sacrifice, and it takes togetherness, and it certainly takes humility. Now, when I think of a model of Micah 6:8, someone who exemplifies what the Lord requires of us, I think of a man who just passed on 2 weeks ago, John Lewis. And I don't feel like I can at all capture the life of John Lewis in just a few minutes. I would encourage you to listen, if you have not, to President Obama's eulogy this past week, which was an incredible honoring of John Lewis and his legacy. But when I think about doing justice, loving mercy and walking humbly with our God, yes, yes, and yes for John Lewis. Micah 6:8 was part of his DNA. It was deep in his bones. He was relentless about seeking justice his entire adult life. And he knew it required sacrifice, not the thousands of rams type of sacrifice that God dismisses earlier in Micah 6, but sacrifices that included arrest, included being beaten on that Selma Bridge, included the ongoing emotional and physical sacrifices that came with his fight. And John Lewis would call out sin. He would call out injustice. He would like God does in Micah 6, bring an indictment against those perpetuating injustices. He was persistent, he was present, and he did, yes, walk humbly with his God throughout it all. I'm incredibly grateful for the Micah 6:8 model and the legacy we see from a man like John Lewis. So as we think about moving to a close, again, the big idea that God indicts us and invites us to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with him. The tone in all of Micah, but especially in chapter 6, and the tone in Jesus's ministry too, include both an indictment of injustices and an invitation to do something about it. And we need to receive both, because if we only receive the indictment and only talk about the vast and numerous historical and current injustices, and we just dwell in that and hang in that and never have an injection of hope, we're going to stay in a spot that's just a tough spot to be in. And on the other hand, though, if we only receive the invitation part, we gloss over God's indictments of the injustices that we have created, endorsed, contributed to, either through action or inaction. If we only receive the invitation, we can dangerously harm the cause of biblical justice. It takes both. Deeply acknowledging God's indictment and embracing his ongoing invitation and requirement of his people to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with him. So some questions to consider. I'm going to put them all up at the same time. Each of the questions has a we component and an I component. I don't want us to just think I for all these. I'm going to read them with the pronoun we, the pronoun us. The first one, how do we need to become more aware of past and current injustices? You know, when is it that we just need to educate ourselves? And I think for some of us, we've been doing that for a long time. For others of us, it's been newer over these past several months. If you need a resource, Tasha Riles has a great one, an anti-racism resource guide. Check it out on social media. That's a great place to start. Our website also has some really good resources listed as well. Second, how is God indicting us where we have created, perpetuated, or contributed in any way to injustices? Like I said earlier, it's not just the man. It's not just someone out there. There are things that we have done that have contributed. We got to search that out. We can't come to the conclusion that we are completely innocent. The third one, amid this pandemic, what does it look like to do justice and love mercy? Let's not wait for everything to go back to whatever. So for example, what does it look like here in this community surrounding our new location? We have an event coming up in August. That's a start. What does it look like to do justice and love mercy on a persistent basis amid the pandemic? What about this fourth one? Have we actually counted the costs? And once counting the costs, do we have the courage, conviction, and commitment to not just dabble in justice, but to persistently do justice, not just occasionally? A few more. As we attempt to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly, how might we or how do we neglect the with your God part of it all? Are we trying to do this just on our own and in the absence of really being in the presence of the Lord and in the power of his Spirit? And then for those who've been doing justice for a long time, this is not a new rodeo for you. You're like, Aaron, I've been in it. How are you replenishing your spirit so you can serve from that overflow and not from an empty vessel? So I'd encourage you, if you're watching on Sunday morning or if you're watching this later, take a photo of these questions. Pick a few of them and reflect on the we part of each and the I part of each too. Talk about your reflection with others. Don't just, you know, keep it between you and God in a journal. Talk about it. Because if we're truly to have Micah 6:8 as part of our church's DNA, it goes well beyond this nice looking t-shirt. It's going to take some work. So let's do the work of reflection and more fully do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God.